Chapter 4 Character Inspiration, Outside In. Inspiration rarely blazes into a finished, fully cast story. An artist's instincts usually spark just a sliver of intuition or a hint of mystery. These intriguing fragments send chain reactions of free association spiraling through the imagination. At first, what seems like a breakthrough usually dead ends in a cul-de-sac of cliches. But in time, precious insights trace a winding trail to success. Inspiration can erupt from any of the many realms that surround an author. So picture the storyteller's universe as five concentric spheres nested one inside the other. 1. The outermost shell comprises actuality, time and place, people and things, past and present. 2. Inside the actual world rotates the fictional media of page, stage, and screen. 3. Within that sphere orbit the storytelling genres with all their various conventions. 4. Each story houses a backstory reaching back to the characters' births, turning points that happen during the telling, and themes that unite all these events. 5. At the epicenter stands the author's creative self, looking out in search of inspiration. Let's begin on the outside and work our way in to the writer. Reality as inspiration. An impulse for character creation often sparks when the density of reality, objects, images, words, sounds, odors, flavors, textures, collides with a boundless imagination. Any random sensation or experience could trigger a cascade of freewheeling impressions that ultimately matures into a complex character. For the storyteller, however, the most frequent inspiration comes from other people. People are to writers what sounds are to musicians. When an author improvises a character, human nature supplies the notes that the writer composes into a symphony of behaviors. As a result, fictional characters and real people divide into two very different genera of humanity. A real person is enigmatic and incomplete, a life yet to be lived. A character is an artwork, a complete, expressive version of its original inspiration. People exist, yet characters often seem more intensely real. When people sail directly at us, we alter course to avoid collisions. Characters just glide on by, busily unaware that we watch their every turn. People confront us, we affect them. Characters intrigue us, we absorb them. Early 20th century authors like Henry James and Luigi Pirandello felt that although characters could be known in godlike ways, as their novels and plays demonstrated, they had little confidence in objective observations of real people. Since they could witness only gestures and traits, they doubted they could ever know people in depth. They felt that the diagnosis of hidden motives is, at best, a guess, an educated guess, perhaps, but subject to error and prejudice. And they were right. If you're writing a memoir, for example, your cast will naturally include people you know, but an acquaintance turned into a character can be as superficial as a snapshot. When you draw directly from life, look beneath the surface. Uncover silent truths. Surprise us, then, with your insights. Do not copy. Rather, reimagine real people into intriguing characters we can believe in. In other words, finding inspiration in a real person does not guarantee credibility. If a writer doesn't trust or believe in someone, he doesn't feel compelled to write him. But if, trait after trait, credibility grows in his mind, deepening his belief, then the work begins. Often, one unique facet suddenly implies an entire humanity. And this, quote, telling detail, unquote, lifts an interesting inspiration out of the what is and into the what could be. Writers with limited knowledge of their character's setting, society, and traits generalize and thus shrivel their belief and with that, their power to invent. Writers with a global purchase on reality generate unique characters in one-of-a-kind settings that instantly involve readers and audiences. Medium as inspiration. Choice of medium, the second source of inspiration, not only influences the shape of an author's stories, but the traits and behaviors of the characters who live in them. To please the camera, for example, screen characters tend to act more visually than verbally. Screenwriters, therefore, tend to create characters who can express themselves with looks and gestures. To please theater audiences, stage characters act more verbally than visually. Playwrights, therefore, tend to endow their characters with expressive dialogue. Stage and screen characters perform in the present tense, aiming verbal and visual actions at their future desires. Prose voices usually narrate in the past tense, recalling events, retrospectively interpreting what happened in detail. Prose writers, therefore, often give their first-person narrators keen memories, discerning eyes, and sensitivity to subtext. Beyond characterizing roles, choice of medium also impacts a writer's personal sense of identity. Who am I? A playwright? Showrunner? Screenwriter? Novelist? Each of these titles has a noble tradition, but I urge writers to move freely back and forth from page to screen. Shrinking your writerly identity to a single medium limits your creative range. If, for example, no one offers to produce your screenplay, why not rework it into another medium? Stage it as a play, or publish it as a novel. Put your characters in public, watch how readers and audiences react. The insights you gain can never be glimpsed alone at your desk. Air your stories, field responses, watch your skills grow. Flex your talents and give yourself an all-media title. Writer. To take your identity to a deeper level, ask, am I in love with the art in myself or myself in the art? Do you write because the life inside of you demands expression or because you dream of living an artist's life? Many novices nurture crushes on Hollywood or Broadway or the writer-infested countryside of Connecticut. After a few rejections, their dream implodes and they quit. So make certain that whichever medium inspires you harmonizes with more than a lifestyle. Genre as inspiration. Most writers, I suspect, find inspiration in reality far less than they think, and in fiction far more than they know. A true first spark rarely flashes from something seen on a street corner or glimpsed online. More often than not, it's a phrase of dialogue or a beautifully turned image found in a novel, play, film, or series written in the genre they love. The major media contain numerous genres, as we'll see in Chapter 14, each with various subgenres, all of which can be combined or merged into an endless variety of story designs. So when in search of a new, original subject, pay attention to your own story-going habits. What screen series do you binge on? What films and plays do you run to see? Which novels do you read? What genre do you love? Let your passions inspire your early inspirations for character. Events as inspiration. Konstantin Stanislavski, the Russian stage director, taught his actors a technique to unlock their talents that he called the magic if. The shift to a hypothetical way of thinking that opens the imagination. To create a true-to-character moment, the actor asks the open-ended question, if X were to happen, what would I do? Then imagines his reaction. So, for example, if the cast were rehearsing a family argument scene, an actor might silently ask himself, what would happen if at this moment I were to punch my brother? How might he react? How might I react to his reaction? With these hypothetical questions, these ifs, his imagination leaps to an unexpected yet truthful behavior. Character creators do the same. As the magic if floats through a writer's imagination, he improvises an inciting incident that in turn triggers the events that follow. If a shark ate a vacationer, what kinds of characters would go after the shark? If a woman discovered that throughout nearly 5 decades of marriage, her husband was secretly in love with his first love, his long-deceased fiancé, what kind of wife would let that revelation destroy her happiness? The question, what would happen if, often inspires a story's inciting incident, that in turn inspires the characters who react to it, that then determines whether the telling is plot-driven or character-driven. Stephen King says his novels always begin plot-driven. To launch a telling, he magic ifs an inciting incident beyond his protagonist's control. From that point on, however, he hopes his characters will take over and make decisions he didn't see coming, so that by the last page, his tales feel character-driven. Theme as inspiration. Writing is an exploration of life. Like a seafarer, an author sails into his story, never quite sure where he's headed or what he'll find when he gets there. In fact, if nothing on the horizon surprises him, he's steering a time-worn passage and needs a new compass point. Eventually, as characters and events merge in climactic turning points, the writer discovers his story's meaning. In other words, the story surprises the writer with this insight. The writer does not dictate meaning to the story. And what is that meaning? All well-told stories, from ancient myths to modern satires, express one essential idea: how and why life changes. This meaning arises out of deep causes that arc a story's core value from negative to positive, or positive to negative. For example, from hate to love, or the reverse, from freedom to slavery, or the reverse, from a meaningless life to a meaningful life, or the reverse, and so on through the myriad values at stake in humanity's countless tales. As a writer works in search of story, hidden causes from beneath the surface of society, or within a character's subconscious mind, suddenly reveal themselves, delivering insights into character an author can only discover through improvisation. However, when writers move in the opposite direction, when they start with a belief and then concoct a plot and a cast to demonstrate it, spontaneity hardens and the unforeseen is never discovered. Belief-fixated writers, in their burning zeal to prove their point, reduce stories to illustrated lectures and characters to mouthpieces. This practice is as old as medieval morality plays that cast the universal human being or everyman as protagonist and then surround him with players who act out his encounters with ideas such as virtue and vice, mercy and mischief, beauty and knowledge, birth and death, all in an effort to educate the morally illiterate. Today, the practice of working backward from idea to story is the unfortunate tendency of social drama. This genre takes its themes from the many maladies that infect society: poverty, sexism, racism, political corruption, injustices and sufferings in all their guises. A writer, for example, may come to believe that although drug dependency is a terrible social ill, it can be cured by love. So, starting with the theme, love cures addiction, he first creates a last act climax in which an act of love turns an addict from decades of enslavement to a lifetime of sobriety. Knowing his ending, he then strings turning points back to a pill-popping inciting incident, fills events in between with characters who enact his theory. The good people become very, very good people, the bad people very, very bad people, and all the dialogue argues on-the-nose explanations of the power of love to cure addiction. The plastic results change no one's mind about love or addiction. Meaning discovered while exploring character creation is always more insightful than belief used to mechanize a plot. Character biography as inspiration. Every character has a life history trailing back to the family that gave him birth. Does this past matter to the writer? Novelist Philip Roth thought yes. For him, the past was a cache of motivational catalysts and jeweled dimension. That was why he devised 5,000 or more biographical bits and pieces per protagonist. Playwright David Mamet thought not. For him, inventing childhoods with or without the usual traumas seemed a waste of time. These conflicting views have as much to do with the author's media choices as his work habits. Novels, with exceptions, speak in the past tense and project their characters' lives over spans of time. The theater, with exceptions, runs its scenes along the cutting edge of the now. In fact, to get biographical exposition on stage, playwrights call on novelistic devices such as reminiscing monologues and flashbacks, as did Edward Albee in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and Three Tall Women. I side with Roth. Although few of his 5,000 pieces of character biography found their way to the page, they gave him the foundational knowledge that set off fireworks of creative choices. As you compile a character's past, look for patterns rather than singularities. Redundant emotional experiences deposit residues. Repeated traumas cause PTSD. Daily coddling produces egoists. Imprints left by reoccurring emotions affect motivations. What to seek versus what to avoid. Temperaments, calm versus nervous. Dispositions, optimistic versus pessimistic. Personalities, charming versus irritating, and other such traits. Movements in the subconscious inspire qualities of behavior, and qualities of behavior mirror subconscious movements. Once these patterns take root, they drive lifelong strivings. A character rarely abandons his childhood traits in the face of adult conflicts. Instead, he will often react to a person in the present as if he were someone from his past. Groundwork laid in biography, therefore, will determine the tactics a character uses in later life. So, as you build out a character's years prior to the story's inciting incident, focus on adolescence. It's in these preteen days that he first dreams about the future, testing and formulating possible meanings and purposes. If he's lucky, he'll have a positive experience, an inspirational teacher, a personal epiphany that commits him to the goal he pursues for a lifetime. Or his first glimpse of life purpose may turn sharply negative. He suffers confusion, doubt, shame, fear, sadness, anger, depression, any combination or all of these at once. In other words, he becomes a teenager. He then spends who knows how many years in an identity crisis of minor or major magnitude, trying to figure out who he is, where he came from, where he's going, how he will fit in when he gets there. At some future point, for better or worse, a workable identity solidifies. He matures into a historian of his personal past and a prophet of his personal future, poised to enter your story. While doing this research, the writer often comes to value the richness of the past over the void of the future. The remembered comes with textures and tensions, scents and shapes. The imagined offers possibilities without subtleties, blanks to be filled. From a character's point of view, he can only hope that the future will repeat a pattern he's coped with in the past. The self story as inspiration. As a final tack from outside in, do this. Sit your character down in a chair across from you, introduce yourself, and ask him to tell you his self story. Your character is, of course, non-existent. So when he speaks, it will be in a voice only your imagination can hear. In effect, you and your creative self have a conversation. Self stories express how people think about their life and see the reality around them. Elicit your character's self story by asking questions about high points, low points, turning points, successes, failures, and other moments of stress. The story a character tells about himself, although rarely factual, expresses who he thinks he is. You have to decide if his version is true or false or some of both. As he tells his tale, bear in mind that all statements of self are self-serving. It's impossible for human beings to do otherwise. All lines of dialogue, for example, that start with the pronoun I are followed, to some degree, by a deceit or exaggeration, no matter how profound or petty. When a character confesses to terrible deeds, a whisper from his subtext implies a bit of self-congratulation to the effect, "Aren't I sensitive, honest, and clear-thinking to see these faults in myself and courageous to admit them in public?" When Hamlet curses himself with, "Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I," a certain pride and self-awareness rolls through his subtext. In any case, self-descriptions do not mean what they seem to mean. They always have a purpose beyond the literal. So, it's up to you to sense the difference between truth and BS, between self-awareness and self-deception. Always compare what a character says with what you feel when he says it. No one is who he seems to be. Everyone wears a persona of characterization, the masks they've evolved to get through their day with as little friction as possible. To see behind this mask, question your character about his greatest dilemmas, the crisis choices he's made, the actions he's taken in the face of high risk. A self story, for example, that matches cause with effect and organizes consistent values around persistent goals suggests a character with a well-organized psychology. Whereas an incoherent, inconsistent self story that disconnects cause and effect and aims at multiple contradictory goals suggests the opposite. Contradictions within a character form his dimensions, as we'll see in Chapter 9. So, as you listen to your character's self-story, be alert to his inner oppositions. People often seek two things that cannot coexist. While he claws his way up the corporate ladder, for example, he expects pats on the back from his co-workers. Doubtful. When he tells you about the various things he wants out of life, do they seem consistent or incongruous? Find his whys. Your character's true motivations will be subconscious to him, but nonetheless, he will offer steadfast rationalizations for wanting what he wants. You, like an annoying 5-year-old, must repeatedly ask why. Why does he do what he does? How does he explain his actions, his desires? And what's his plan to reach these desires? Has he mapped out a life strategy, or does he improvise day by day? Finally, ask about his beliefs. Beliefs create the context for every action a human being takes. Does he believe God exists or not? That romantic love exists or not? In his mind, what's good, evil? What institutions does he trust? Private, public, none? What would he risk his life for, his soul for? What deep beliefs hold his world together? Although beliefs mold behavior, they can change, sometimes on a dime. Fanatics, for example, often reverse ideologies and join the opposite side. Communists become fascists, fascists, communists. For the true believer, the passion of believing is more important than the meaning of belief. Let the insights you gain from all of these levels inspire your development of character dimensionality and inner complexity.